From South Los Angeles to Washington, D.C., and many points in between, this is Political Talk on AnnenbergRadio.org and NeonTommy.com. I'm Max Schwartz, along with Katie Gregg and Jenna DeKnight. Without further ado, let's get started. On this week's broadcast, Jenna DeKnight will be giving the wrap-up. Before we start, though, I will start off with a Boston update. The FBI identified two suspects on Thursday afternoon, one being 26-year-old Tamerlan Sarnav, who was reportedly a radicalized Muslim, and 19-year-old Dazokar Sarnav. They are accused of planting and setting off explosives at the end of the Boston Marathon that killed three people, including an 8-year-old boy, and injured more than 170. On Thursday night, the two are accused of killing an MIT police officer, Sean Collier, while he was on duty. This led to a chase that took police into Watertown. A firefight ensued that ended with an MBTA transit police officer being shot and the 26-year-old suspect dead. Friday evening, after a long search and lockdown of an area in Watertown, a homeowner came out of his house and found a blood trail in his backyard, leading to a tear in his boat's covering. He reportedly looked inside and saw the 19-year-old suspect. He called authorities, who responded in full force. There was a firefight, and after negotiators spoke with the man, he was arrested and taken to a hospital. Sarnav is now at Beth Israel Medical Center in Boston with gunshot wounds to the neck and head. It is now being reported that the neck wound may have come from a failed suicide attempt. Contrary to some reports, he has not been read his Miranda rights. On Sunday, Sarnav was interrogated after coming out of sedation, and he was able to respond to some questions in writing. Earlier today, Monday, Dazokar was charged with using a weapon of mass destruction. He could be sentenced to death if he is found guilty of this federal offense. According to Reuters, Sarnav was also charged with malicious destruction of property resulting in death. Is there anything else you two would like to add?
Nothing in particular, just it's good that we've, found the people who committed this crime, and hopefully we'll get to the bottom of everything.
Well, he still has to be found guilty by a jury of his peers.
Yes, exactly. And hopefully, I think that the younger brother might be more willing to talk now that his older brother is, deceased. So he might have been controlling the whole.
Well, that's one hypothesis out there, considering the younger brother, the 19-year-old, was a naturalized U.S. citizen who became a citizen on September the 11th. And it was the brother who apparently was the radicalized Muslim. But again, these are just all reports. We won't know anything for sure until more investigation is done.
Right. And I think the younger brother was actually, he was living a pretty good life in the U.S., I'd say. I think he was being treated pretty well. So, I can see that he would be happy here.
Mm-hmm. And there are no reports of him not having any American friends. So with that, after this short music break, Katie Gregg will be on to discuss Afghanistan.
The president, his top general, and certain members of Congress are at odds once again. There are about 66,000 U.S. service members in Afghanistan. President Barack Obama has ordered about half of these soldiers to come home in the next year as part of the plan to transfer responsibility for the war to Afghanistan's security forces by 2014. Last Tuesday, General Joseph Dunford, the current U.S. commander in occupied Afghanistan, warned the Senate Armed Services Committee against the idea of removing troops after 2014. He said the U.S. needed to retain a military position there beyond the supposed end of the war. About 80% of U.S. bases in Afghanistan have already been closed or turned over to the Afghan National Security Forces. Dunford said the job of getting them shut down won't be completed by December 2014. In January, the Wall Street Journal claimed that the Pentagon has alternate plans that call for anywhere between 3,000 and 9,000 troops in Afghanistan after the withdrawal. The requirements and shape of the force will change for those who will remain in Afghanistan. More experienced military leaders will be needed for the advisory and assistance role in the country. British Brigadier Stuart Skate said, quote, "What that means is, for the first time, the Afghans are in control of their own destiny," end quote.
What's your view, General? What is your number?
Senator, I'm going to not give you a number. I'm going to give you a range. My best military advice at this point is that we leave it as a range of numbers.
So, guys, what I was wondering about all of this, how many people do you think are going to end up being left in Afghanistan, actually?
I think right now that's an open-ended question, as General Dunford said in his testimony to Congress. He can't give an exact number right now because we're going to have to, for the lack of a better term, play it by ear. And I think only time will tell. It depends on how many are actually needed.
Do you think that Karzai would be upset with having, you know, 3,000 to 6,000 U.S. soldiers?
Again, I think that all depends on how well the Afghans can maintain their own security. And the question I want to throw back at you two is, why do you think General Dunford did not give an exact number of troops that should remain?
Honestly, I think it's just because he probably doesn't want people to expect, you know, for there to only be 3,000 and then there'd be 9,000 and people get really frustrated that more people are being, you know, left overseas, because I feel like a lot of people have just been bothered by like such a strong presence there and not returning our soldiers home.
That's understandable. Jenna, what's your input on this subject?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, it's rather to not give an exact number and have people be, you know, pleasantly surprised with the outcome that we are being able to withdraw more troops than actually having it an issue that we're not being active enough in trying to solve this issue.
And I know Senator McCain was very upset with this response. Do you believe that Senator McCain and other senators that were frustrated as well, do you believe they should be angry at General Dunford?
With his response saying that they don't know how many people are going to be left overseas?
Yes.
You know, I kind of understand why he wouldn't be specific. I just think we really need to see how it plays out. You know, a year is a long time, especially in such a, like, a war area. So I feel like it's fair to see how things play out and decide closer to that time.
But in terms of the anger, do you think that he should be angry?
No.
He meaning the senator?
No, I just think that on the other side of that, which is I agree with, but we have been waiting a long time. So I guess that anger is just that, you know, it has just been, like, a question that we've all been waiting to hear. So that's, I think, where that is coming from.
Okay.
So after our short music break, Max Schwartz will talk about the Gang of Eight's immigration legislation.
Last week, we said that compromise is possible in Washington on guns, but the gun bill has been pulled from the Senate for now, so senators can have more time to discuss the bill. The question remains, will the immigration bill have the same fate? The senators that have crossed party lines to write immigration legislation have been dubbed the Gang of Eight. The members of the group are four Republicans, Senators John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, and Jeff Flake, and four Democrats, Senators Chuck Schumer, Dick Durbin, Bob Menendez, and Michael Bennett. Their bill includes pathways to citizenship for people who are here illegally and increased border security, the two sticking points for both parties. The bill also includes increased regulation at home by forcing business owners to check an electronic database to ensure that they are not hiring someone who is in the country illegally, and it contains a change in the visa system. The path to citizenship would be, according to the bill, a 13-year process, which would include background checks. The bill's initiative to increase border security calls for an additional $4.5 billion in funding for this. The Huffington Post reported that the eight senators have a goal of 90% success rate on the border between the United States and Mexico. The Huffington Post is also reporting that the Department of Homeland Security must have a plan for additional security along the border within 6 months. Immigration reform was a platform that President Obama ran on, and it was a big point in his first State of the Union address of the second term. The bill is not what everyone involved wanted, but ABC News is reporting that President Obama does support the legislation. There have been reports that some members of Congress want parts of the bill changed because of the recent attacks in Boston. The eight senators have said that this bill will pass, unlike last week's gun control. So, what political issues or forces do you believe will help or hinder this legislation?
I think that this legislation could be hindered by the recent events in Boston, just because I think that people might be more or less willing to vote for, you know, a bill that will allow all these immigrants to become American citizens. I think that this bombing also in Boston, it could really, it could make Americans be less willing to be accepting of, you know, immigrants as a whole, but also, I mean, they were Muslim, right? So I think there's already such a stereotype associated with that, and I think that could really hinder people's opinion about the bill.
But Cardinal O'Malley of Boston said that we need to be tolerant of all religions, and people can't hold animosity towards Muslims.
And they shouldn't, but I mean, we can't. People aren't perfect. People are going to do, you know, what they believe in.
And just like in 9/11, I mean, this terror attack, people, it's an emotional state that we're in, and I think that people want to, like, point a finger at somebody, and I think that, unfortunately, that is what happens sometimes, that people make these generalizations, and then certain races are stigmatized, and, I mean, that, I think, is why they think that we should push this bill back a little, because it's a sensitive time right now, and putting it in that, you're going to have people acting on their emotions, which, in other circumstances, that I don't think they would be.
Okay.
I think that could definitely hinder it, but I think it could be helped by just the fact that, you know, the Gang of Eight is a group of Republicans and Democrats, and I think that people will respond to that positively, you know, seeing that people, that they're working together, and this isn't just a bill that's, you know, from the Democrats or from the Republicans. It's a real compromise.
One more question I have for you on this subject is, for those that are unfamiliar, primaried in the recent years has become a verb, meaning that normally an incumbent lost in the primary, and now because of Citizens United, this is more prevalent than ever and more of a factor than ever. So do you believe that there will be incumbents that risk losing their primary elections or will be primaried because of voting for this legislation?
I think that it's possible that some people might stand up for this legislation and be primaried, as you said, because of it. If they truly believe in it, I don't see why they wouldn't stand up for what they believe in. I mean, that's what politicians should do, but
should do, and we'll discuss that in 1 minute. After another brief music break, Jenna the Knight will be on to wrap up the topics discussed in today's show.
As Katie mentioned, the United States is making efforts to better Afghanistan in this sensitive post-withdrawal period of increased instability. Attacks have erupted from a surge of hostilities as Afghanistan's spring fighting season begins. With foreign forces being forced to withdraw, the responsibilities will fall into the local forces' hands. Insurgents shot 6 police officers dead at a checkpoint, and a suicide bomber killed 3. The Afghanistan NGO Safety Office reported Sunday that insurgent-initiated attacks increased by 47% during the first quarter of 2013, compared to the same period last year. Afghanistan's Defense Ministry said that the Afghan Army carried out 2,209 military operations during a month-long period ending Sunday. In that time, 467 insurgents and 107 soldiers were killed, and 362 militants were arrested, the ministry said in a report issued on Sunday. April has been the deadliest month this year for security forces and Afghan and foreign civilians alike. According to an Associated Press tally, 222 people, including Sunday's 9 fatalities, have been killed in violence around the nation this month. As Max mentioned, the immigration bill is undergoing reform. However, the bill will undergo delay due to last week's terror attack in Boston. Republican Senator Dan Coats of Indiana said Sunday that Congress should wait until the emotional reaction to the violence subsides before tackling immigration legislation. GOP Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa made headlines Friday when he said that lawmakers shouldn't rush the legislative process, given the events of this week, and was among the first to cite the Boston Marathon bombings in the immigration debate. The two suspects in Monday's bombings are both of Chechen ethnicity. They came to the United States in 2002 and 2006 from Kyrgyzstan. They were granted asylum, and the younger brother became a naturalized citizen last year. Supporters of the new immigration plan argue against critics, saying that the recent events in Boston are no reason to delay immigration reform. Senator Chuck Schumer, one of the Gang of Eight senators who drafted the immigration plan, believes that those who opposed the bill from the start are using the Boston incident as an excuse to stall the legislation. The gang hopes that the bill will pass quickly for the safety of our country.
Now it is time for our one-minute spotlight segment, and up first is Katie Gregg.
Washington, Beijing, and Pyongyang are about to embark on 7 days of diplomatic negotiations, but it is not known what these negotiations will actually lead to. Last Thursday, North Korea outlined their demands that must be met before they will talk with Washington. They demanded the stop to UN sanctions as well as a permanent end to U.S.-South Korean military exercises. North Korea demanded that the United States and South Korea stop all warlike actions. In the past, President Obama has offered aid to the famine-stricken nation in exchange for the stoppage of their nuclear program, but Obama has made it clear that carrots will not be offered to North Korea because of the country's recent actions. It is unlikely that Washington will agree to North Korea's demands.
As I previously mentioned, the gun control bill that was crafted from compromise couldn't make it through the Senate. It needed 60 votes to pass the filibuster. Yes, that is right. The bill failed. 54-46, even though 90% of the American public supported it. The bill, which did not include a ban on assault weapons, did include background checks for certain gun sales. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada has removed the bill from the floor, so negotiations can go on. This raises two questions that I would like you to consider. Should receiving 51% of the vote be considered passing? And, politicians have not admitted to this, but should there be organizations that are so powerful that they scare and manipulate politicians into voting a certain way? You can respond to those questions by tweeting us at our hashtag PoliticalTalkPodcast or by emailing us at PoliticalTalkPodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you, Max. More than 150 people were killed and thousands were injured on Saturday after a powerful earthquake struck Sichuan, China. The magnitude 6.6 earthquake struck just after 8 a.m. local time in Lushan County. The quake toppled buildings, triggered landslides, and disrupted phone and power connections. The quake's shallow depth of less than 8 miles likely magnified the impact. In the jurisdiction of Yan, which administers Lushan, 19 people were reported missing and more than 6,700 people were injured, according to administration. More than 7,000 soldiers and armed police were sent to the disaster area, as well as more than 1,000 provincial rescue workers and hundreds of doctors. Weather has not been permitting and the rain has slowed rescue work.
Thank you for listening to Political Talk. We would like to thank Joel Zink, our engineer, Willa Seidenberg and Karen Lowe, the Annenberg Radio News co-faculty advisors, and Aaron Schrank, the Annenberg Radio News executive producer, for all of their help. The music used on today's program has been composed, recorded, and provided by Eric Schwartz. He is on the web at www.ericschwartz.com. From the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism at the University of Southern California, I'm Max Schwartz.
I'm Katie Gregg.
And I'm Jenna DeKnight. We hope to have you back next week. In the meantime, we can be reached at politicaltalkpodcast@gmail.com and on Twitter by using the hashtag PoliticalTalkPodcast. All audio used in this week's program is courtesy of C-SPAN.